Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Thursday, August 16th. Welcome to Africa Link, live from our DW studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Wanjiku Mwaura.
And I am Ajen Nyinge. Glad you could join us. We are also live on our Facebook page at DW Africa, so feel free to drop us a line.
That's right. Now, coming up, protests break out in Uganda after lawmaker popularly known as Bobi Wine is charged.
There was a demonstration this evening, and the police has been involved in running battles with some of his supporters, and the road was cut off, forcing road users to find alternative ways to get to their destinations.
The situation remained tense in southern Cameroon as doctors and nurses flee following attacks by both the government security forces and the separatists.
How come that in the process of saving life, your own life is being taken? This is unacceptable and must be condemned. In all strong terms, it is really, really bad.
And in Ethiopia, the latest UNICEF report states internal displacement has significantly increased due to ongoing conflict.
All that plus your responses on our Facebook page shortly after we hear what has been happening around the world.
I'm Eunice Wanjiro with DW News. Torrential rain and overflowing dams are wreaking havoc in the southern state of Kerala in India. The death toll from flooding has risen to 106, with nearly 150,000 people left homeless. Hundreds of troops have been deployed to help in what the government says is the worst flooding in decades. Still on a sad note, the undisputed queen of soul, singer Aretha Franklin, has died at the age of 76 after a battle with pancreatic cancer. She died in Detroit, where she began her career singing in her father's church. Aretha Franklin was known for her powerful voice, which earned her fame awards. And above all, she earned immense respect as a powerful black artist during the civil rights period. A pop singer and a prominent critic of Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni was charged with unlawful possession of firearms and ammunition in a military court on Thursday for his alleged role in the stoning of Museveni's convoy on Monday. Lawmaker Robert Chagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine, was arrested in the northwestern town of Arua earlier this week. In a court session closed to reporters, he was remanded and will appear on August 23rd. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Mali's President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita has been officially re-elected for another five-year term. Results showed that 73-year-old Keita gained 67% of Sunday's runoff vote. Bakari Traitor, Keita's campaign manager, had this to say.
We have never made a mistake. We always said Keita, IBK, was the candidate of the people of Mali. So you can see for yourself. He won the first round with all this rallying behind him. It's obvious that it was going to be the will of the people.
Opposition leader Soumaila Cisse says his party plans to contest the results. The election was marred by accusations of fraud, violence and low turnout. A Malaysian court ruled the trial of two women accused of assassinating the half-brother of North Korea's leader can proceed. The women were hoping to be freed on Thursday, but a judge said they were part of a well-planned conspiracy. Indonesia's Siti Asia and Vietnam's Doan Thi Huong are accused of smearing VX nerve agent on Kim Jong-nam's face in an airport terminal in Kuala Lumpur on February the 13th in 2017. Hundreds of U.S. newspapers on Thursday joined a campaign to highlight the importance of a free press in the face of attacks by President Donald Trump. Newspapers from Maine to Hawaii pushed back against Trump's attacks on fake news with a coordinated series of editorials speaking up for a free and vigorous press. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Eunice Wanjiro.
This is DW's Africa Link program. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And I'm Wanjiku Mwaura. A very warm welcome to you listening to this program on our Facebook page. That's DW Africa.
And Wanjiku, at this point, I would like to acknowledge those listening to us on our Facebook page. And we have Jovini Tostos, Akwei, Simon Tor, Rabian Shaw, Wanjiku, the list is endless.
We are so glad that you have joined us today. Now, we start the show in Uganda, where we are bringing you the latest about Kyagulanyi Ssentamu. That's Bobi Wine, he's popularly known, who was arrested in the northwestern town of Arua earlier this week. Now, he was presented to court today and charged with unlawful possession of firearms and ammunition in a military court for his alleged role in the clashes in which the longtime president's motorcade was attacked by people throwing stones. Just before the show, I caught up with DW's Alex Gita, and he brings us up to date with the situation on the ground.
Bobi Wine, as is popularly known in Uganda, his name is Robert Kyagulanyi Ssentamu, has been arraigned at the General Court Martial in Uguru in northern Uganda, led by Lieutenant General Andrew Gut as its chairman. He has been charged with the two counts. One is of unlawful possession of firearms and another of unlawful possession of ammunition, but not treason, as the police had earlier stated. So this means he jumps the death penalty, which is given to people who are convicted of treason. So he has been airlifted from Gulu to Kampala, where he will be remanded until the 23rd of August this month, when he reappear in the same court again.
And did you have a chance to look at him, to see him? According to reports, he has been hurt. Did you get to see this?
Well, Kyagulanyi Ssentamu cannot walk. He was being carried from the pickup which brought him to the court, and he was taken inside. He couldn't walk. But when the court started, all journalists were asked to leave, and only his lawyers and a group of members of parliament who traveled from Kampala were allowed to attend this court. All journalists were not allowed inside. But according to his lawyer, Mr. Asuman Basalirwa, also an MP, Kyagulanyi Ssentamu could not talk, he could not see. But let us listen to Mr. Basalirwa, his lawyer, talking to us about Chagulanyi's condition.
He couldn't speak because his health condition is bad. He seems to have been tortured. He can neither sit nor stand. He cannot talk. His face is deformed. So he only kept quiet and was remanded to Makindye military facility. We said that he should not be remanded in a military facility because accessing him becomes extremely difficult. Our prayer was rejected.
Now, after the charges were read out, what was the reaction?
Well, in Kampala, where he has an office as a musician, because Kyagulanyi Ssentamu, known as Bobi Wine, is a popular musician in Uganda. He has an office in Kampala, in a place called Kamocha. There was a demonstration this evening, and the police has been involved in running battles with some of his supporters, and the road was cut off, forcing road users to find alternative ways to get to their destinations. The police had to fire live ammunition and also tear gas to stop this demonstration.
What can we expect after this?
Well, government say they have enough evidence to go to trial with the evidence they have and all the charges preferred against Kyagulanyi. They say they have no political intentions against him, but all these are security related.
That was DW's Alex Gita in Kampala. Now, I see lots of people are still joining us. Namanda says, live and clear here in India. Thank you so much for joining us. We also have Joshua who says, free Bobi Wine. This is just the report that we ran right now.
Yes, yes, indeed. So keep those comments flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Now to Cameroon, where doctors and nurses continue to flee in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon after frequent attacks targeting especially hospitals. Several of them have been killed and many others injured.
The medical staff says the government forces are accusing them of providing treatment to separatists, while on the other hand, the separatists are accusing the medics of disclosing their identities to the military. One of the doctors, Dancy Elvis, had this to say.
How come that in the process of saving life, your own life is being taken? This is unacceptable and must be condemned. In all strong terms, it is really, really bad. The military comes, chase them out of the hospital, brutalize them, beat them. As medical personnel, we all stand to condemn this act and say they are very wrong. Medical personnel are supposed to be protected in times of war.
Dancy Alvis, they are one of the medical staff that has been affected by the current attacks in southern Cameroon. Earlier, I caught up with our correspondent Moki Kinzeka, who is in Bamenda. He starts by telling us how the situation is.
It is very tense in the northwest and southwest regions. In fact, there is hardly a day without attacks from the military or from the armed separatists, and the population is caught in the web of those attacks. Those who have mostly been affected are the medical staff. The medical staff have been leaving the hospitals, abandoning hospitals, and there's this clarion call from them that something should be done immediately for them to get back to work.
And why are the doctors and nurses being targeted by both the government forces and separatists?
Now, let me start and indicate that the accusations are more that the attacks are coming from the government forces, because the government forces think that when the separatists are wounded, they should not be treated at the level of the hospitals. So each time they get information that there are wounded people in the hospital, they move immediately to those hospitals without even investigating, from what the nurses are saying, without investigating if the attacks were done or if the people in the hospital are really the armed separatists or the population. They move there and they get the people, the staff, beaten. They say they are hiding information, they're hiding the armed separatists, so the military tortures them.
And Moki, has this situation been brought under control, or more of the medical staff are expected to flee in the coming days?
More of them may be fleeing in the coming days, because the situation is not under control at all. The fighting is intensifying every other day, and there is fear, there's panic, there's general panic in the whole northwest and southwest regions of the country. And the killing of the couple who are nurses in Bengui has made things worse. So the situation is still explosive, and it's expected that if nothing is done, it is true the governor of the southwest region of Cameroon, Mr. Bernard Okalia Bilai, was saying that they have sent the military to protect the hospitals. But if the military is accused and armed separatists are accused and the attacks continue, it will be difficult for peace to return. It will be difficult for the medical staff to go back to the hospitals, and it will be difficult for the population that is fleeing, that's in the bushes, 200,000 of them, according to the UN, to have medical care, to have treatment.
Moki Kinzeka there in Cameroon. And Wanjiko, anything to do with Cameroon creates a lot of conversation on our Facebook page.
That's right. We have a comment here from Fem Shang Umaru, who says, please, the problem in the Anglophone regions of Cameroon is beyond control as I speak, and no one is secure. Thus, the need for international assistance, as it can no longer be called an internal problem as claimed by others.
And we have this one from Ekeson. He says that the world kept silence just because we are black. So sad.
Indeed it is. And from Cameroon, we head over to Ethiopia now, where a new UNICEF report states that internal displacement has significantly increased because of conflict. The current number of internally displaced people, IDPs, in the country has risen to 2.4 million from 1.6 million.
Well, the humanitarian and disaster resilience plan for Ethiopia costed at $1.6 billion is set to be revised upwards, but international donors have been facing criticism about reluctance to act despite the growing humanitarian needs. Gillian Amelsop, a UNICEF representative in Ethiopia, reacts.
I don't think the donors are reluctant. I think they are very much all trying to raise more funds from their capitals. It's just that the amount of money that donor governments are able to allocate for humanitarian response is unfortunately very stretched around the world at the moment. And obviously in Ethiopia, these are huge numbers. We do require new resources, more resources. The government is doing its best to try and support as much as possible the suffering of this huge number of internally displaced people. And obviously what everyone hopes for is that the majority of these IDPs can return to their homes, but in a dignified, voluntary way, when they know that it's going to be safe for them to return.
That is Gillian Melsop, UNICEF representative in Ethiopia.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And my name is Onjiko Mwaura. We appreciate everyone who's listening on Facebook. I see Ismail Amina, who has commented. We see Prosperity J. Thank you so, so much for joining us.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, in Senegal, a popular rapper tries to change the lives of former criminals.
There was a time in my life when I wasn't on the right path. I used to steal, I drank, I sniffed solvent. But I got caught by the police and I did 3 months in prison. When I got out, G-Pop had just opened. A friend took me there and I met people who gave me options of what I could do to get some work.
We will hear more about that story a little later. But first, World Football Governing Body FIFA is set to suspend Nigeria and Ghana from football activities. The Nigeria Football Federation has been involved in a power tussle since September 30th, 2014, when Amaju Penek was declared the winner of the NFF presidential elections.
And in Ghana, an allegation of corruption leveled against the Football Federation officials has made the government of Ghana to take a decision to dissolve and liquidate the Ghana Football Association. DW's correspondent in Nigeria, Samson Omale, has this report.
These indeed are not the best of times for two of West Africa's most revered footballing nations. The latest threat by world governing football body FIFA could cost both Ghana and Nigeria their place in engaging or participating in any football-related activities. Jide Fashikun, a Nigerian journalist and football administrator, termed the ban as a mockery to FIFA itself.
FIFA itself did tell the Court of Arbitration for Sports in Lausanne in a matter that the Nigerian Football Federation took to that court that election matters are internal to member nations. How suddenly did FIFA now wake up to realize that what was an internal matter has become of its interest?
But Harrison Jala, a former Nigerian international and football administrator, has welcomed the ban, saying it will give a lifeline to the current downward spiral currently being experienced by the Nigerian football.
In 2010, we had the same problem. And if we miss this opportunity to get these issues resolved, then it means we cannot get it anymore.
Nigerian Football Administration has been blighted over time with a recurrent leadership crisis that predates the current leadership. As a matter of fact, no Nigerian football chief has enjoyed being re-elected for a second term as a result of such a crisis. Chris Giwa, the man who ran against Amaju Pinnick, did not accept the results and went on to challenge them in the local court, which ruled in his favor. FIFA has never recognized his election, pointing to third-party interference, which led to Chris Giwa appealing the decision in the Court of Arbitration for Sport, CAS. CAS agreed with the governing body and dismissed his challenge. Interference from any government is forbidden and can result in a football ban. In essence, FIFA laws supersedes that of the judiciary of respective member states, as Charles Anazodo, a Nigerian sports analyst, explains.
The ideal thing is to abide by the laws governing the constitution of FIFA as an organization. So it's either you're in it or you're out of it. It's the people who govern football locally that intervene and circumvent, so to speak, FIFA rules and regulations.
Elsewhere in Ghana, the World Football Governing Body has issued an ultimatum to the government of Ghana to withdraw its court case seeking to liquidate the Ghana FA or else face a ban from all football activities from the 27th of August. The government of Ghana has told the Federation of International Football Association that while it acknowledges its mandate to administer football activities globally, the government also has a responsibility to ensure that businesses operate legally in the country. On the streets of Ghana, it appears some football fans are welcoming the ban.
So if FIFA banners, there is no entertainment that will make peace in Ghana. That will bring peace in Ghana. So we are not aggrieved.
We don't care whether they ban us or they don't ban us. What we have to do is to put the right structures in place. That's all what the people are crying for. It's not about them banning us. Whether they ban us, we don't care about FIFA ban. What will FIFA ban do to us?
Those are some of football fans in Ghana just commenting on that threat by FIFA to suspend Nigeria and Ghana from football activities. And Wanjiko, what are people saying on our Facebook page?
Chichi has left a very amusing comment here. And it is, who cares about Fafi or FIFA, she writes.
I think everybody cares.
Not everybody. There are people who do not particularly enjoy football, watching it or playing it.
Anyway, football has its own politics. And then we have this one from Adeyemi Oluwasola says, yes, the local body can't resolve their problems. Let FIFA be involved. It will serve well.
Keep those comments coming on our live broadcast, which is on the page DW Africa. Remember to share. Don't just enjoy this good stuff by yourself, eh? Share that link.
Use on. Now, the use on today takes us to Senegal, where a popular rapper is providing hope to former young offenders. Fou Malade has established a center in the capital, Dakar, which provides workshops where they can learn music, graffiti, and photography.
But there is one workshop that has been embraced by the whole community, and it is developing skills that you might not usually associate with the hip-hop culture. Emmanuel Lande has more from Dakar.
Oblivious to the red dust kicked up by his trainers and sticking to the hem of his jeans, Aliou, scissors in one hand, paces between the heads of lettuce and chili peppers to prune some mint from wooden planters on the ground. He's a green volunteer at Gidjawai Hip Hop, a cultural centre with a strong focus on teaching urban arts and skills. The various courses on offer have proved a lifeline to many.
There was a time in my life when I wasn't on the right path. I used to steal, I drank, I sniffed solvent. But I got caught by the police and I did 3 months in prison. When I got out, G-Pop had just opened. A friend took me there and I met people who gave me options of what I could do to get some work.
The 34-year-old threw himself into all sorts of activities, aside from rap, DJing, photography or graffiti art. Other hands-on projects, like the vegetable plot, was an instant hit. It's not what you might expect from a hip-hop academy, but it is one of the most popular activities here because it offers a practical skill to develop one's own livelihood.
Hip-hop and gardening are interchangeable. For me, they go together. I never imagined that I'd be farming vegetables one day. Now that I know what I know, I have found my way and tomorrow will be okay.
As the midday sun is starting to sting, Aliou and his friends, a group of boys wearing the hip-hoppers uniform, oversized T-shirt, caps and baggy jeans, take a break and sit together around a small stove waiting for their mint tea to bubble and froth. The improvements in the area haven't gone unnoticed. Babacar Gay is head of the nearby college and passes by daily.
It's green. There's oxygen. I encourage this rather than abusive behavior. I congratulate them and have even requested they set up something similar on the other side of the college.
Despite being round-the-clock busy with album releases and concerts, Fou Malade still makes time for the people in his neighborhood.
Today, people talk about social reintegration. I don't like this expression because young people have never been included. They've always been outcast. They've been in conflict with society because some stole, killed or wounded others to take what they had.
Fou Malade wanted to provide a safe place for young people in his neighborhood to meet and put their energy to better use. What may have started out as an urban cultural arts center for disenfranchised kids has evolved into the heart beating to homegrown hip-hop of an entire community.
That report by Emmanuel Lande in Dakar.
speaking out.
Now, the Nigerian federal government has finally ordered that the most notorious unit of the police, the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, SARS, be overhauled.
Well, the squad has been accused of violating human rights by extorting money from innocent people, harassment, shooting, and sometimes killing innocent citizens. This move comes after a year of protest, both online and offline, by Nigerians through the hashtag Answers campaign. DW's Abu Bakar Jallo with more.
Walking in the streets of most major towns in Nigeria has become a nightmare to the public because of brutality unleashed by the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, SARS. The unit has been accused of conducting their operations without respecting the rule of law. Tamara Clement is one of those who have fallen victim. She says she is still traumatized by her ordeal 2 months ago after they were stopped by the officers from the squad, who then started searching their car. They didn't find anything to implicate them, but this is what they were told.
We are indecently dressed, and that's against the law, so they are going to take us to the station. And we're trying to explain, like, we're not just standing on the road. I mean, even if we're naked, I mean, I don't think there's any words saying that's an offense. And we're not even on the road, we're in a private car. You stopped us, brought us out of the private car, and now you're telling us we're indecently dressed and it's against the law.
Tamara and her friend say they were only allowed to leave after they agreed to pay a bribe. She shared her experience on Twitter, and it soon went viral, getting retweeted more than 1,000 times. But Tamara's isn't an isolated case. There have been reports of shootings, killings, and beatings at the hands of the Special Police Unit. Nigerians have been campaigning for change. The hashtag #EndSARS has been their rallying cry. Nelson Olanipekun is one of those campaigners. He leads a civic organization that provides free legal services for victims of police brutality. With a network of more than 100 volunteers across the country, he says he receives an average of 5 complaints every day from people who have been harassed by SARS officers.
People need immediate remedy for some of the actions, like someone who has been brutalized, someone who is unnecessarily jailed, put behind the bars in the police station. So we had to start sending in lawyers to police stations to get those people out. And we are still working on the class action. Also, we are doing a formal petition to the president on the issue, and some other petitions are ongoing.
After more than a year of activism, EndSARS activists finally have something to rejoice about. Acting President Yemi Osinbajo has already directed the National Human Rights Commission to set up a panel to investigate the alleged unlawful activities of the squad. He says this would give members of the public the opportunity to present their grievances with a view of getting redress.
DW's Abu Bakar Jallo with that report.
And we are still receiving so many comments. Thank you so much for commenting. But specifically on this report, Jane.
We have this one from Blasius Owasong. He says if the SARS are special and strong, they should send them to go fight Boko Haram. We will assess their abilities based on their performance against Boko Haram, not men without any military training.
We also have another person from Ghana who forgot to leave us his or her name. And they write, if the SARS failed to deliver its mandate, it should be reformed instead of scrapping it. But if found out to be totally needless, then it should be scrapped. Just to remind you, we also have our WhatsApp community where you can also send in your thoughts when we are still live on air, and we shall try and read all and that we can during the broadcast.
Absolutely. And we have this one from George Wilson Mwanjala. He says it's a shameful act for fellow Africans to treat others like excursionists.
Thank you so much for these comments. I also have another one here from our top story, Africa Today on Uganda, on our Facebook page. So keep the comments coming. Sarah Kitambo says, Honorable has done nothing but stand for the rights of the people. That's all we have had time for today. My name is Wanjiko Mwaura.
And I'm Jen Yinge. And as Wanjiko said, keep our comments flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa.